All right, today is December 16th, and I'd like to read you a few Christmas stories. Now, these won't be the traditional Christmas stories that people tell their kids, but rather the kind that should give us a little background on why we don't observe Christmas in the church. Now, to do this, I have to read a good bit, of course, and I will try to highlight the really important stuff and not bore you terribly, but I think you'll find some of this fascinating. I'm sure there's a great deal more we could look at and talk about. But it used to be that when someone wanted to find out about the origins of Christmas, let's say you told your neighbor you don't keep Christmas, and he says, how come? And you say something about its origins or its roots or whatever, or it's pagan even. And your neighbor says, ah, that's crazy. And we used to have to, in my day, we used to have to say, look, go get the Encyclopedia Britannica, 11th edition especially, and you'll find all of this laid out for you. And that's what people had to do. And if they couldn't find an Encyclopedia Britannica, or particularly 11th edition, which was the most focused on that, afterward it got watered down a bit, it's still there. But today, of course, people don't do that. I don't know if people even know what an encyclopedia, set of encyclopedias is. But we used to have people go and look for that in the encyclopedia because it often told the truth that nobody really wanted to talk about. Now, in this day and age, of course, that's not true. Today, one can simply go online and find hundreds, if not thousands, of sites that are discussing the origins of Christmas. They fall into, I would say, in my estimation, maybe three groups. I'll define them in three groups for you. Man, Fiery's on the wrong side today, too. Messing me up here. I'll define them loosely into three groups. One that ignores everything that happened before the Protestant Revolution about 500 years ago and says Martin Luther kind of started the process. That's sort of the popular idea they would like to go with because that makes it Christian. The second group is a group that actually acknowledges that Christmas definitely comes from pagan roots and was in place long before Christ arrived on the earth. And that it's filled with pagan practices even. But that it doesn't make any difference. And a third group, a much smaller group, that actually object to keeping Christmas because of its pagan roots. And of course, tacked onto that are those who don't want to keep Christmas because it's become so commercialized that it no longer is a spiritual holiday. It's a business holiday. It's a commercial social event. So you find all of these opinions, and of course many others, but those are the three main groups I would say you would find. Great many theories, of course, about how Christians should look at Christmas. And of course the vast majority fall into the first and second categories, those who would like to just make it Christian starting at the Protestant Reformation, and those who don't really care what its roots are, what its history is, as long as we keep it in Christ's name, that's all that's important. Certainly times have changed since I came to the church in the early 60s, along with many of you. Most people in the world around us have never considered even the pagan aspects of Christmas, though that's becoming, as I said, much more common now than it was in those days. It seems that the churches have sort of been forced by overwhelming evidence in the knowledge explosion that Christmas came out of paganism, that they kind of have to admit it, at least that certain group does, admits it, and then places it in the proper place that the Roman Catholic Church would have placed it 1,800 years ago or so, 1,700 years ago, and say it really doesn't matter, it makes no difference. All right, that said, let's look at some of man's reasoning. I'm just going to read through these for the most part, although I'll pause here and there to maybe emphasize or highlight something. And these are supposed to be scholarly answers, although they're not all from scholars. Some of them are just from ministers. Some of them are from, groups. But here's what they say. These are excerpts. Excerpts from various websites that propose to answer the question of whether Christmas is pagan. Some of these articles are very long and complex. Even as it is, I wrote all the scriptures in here because it's getting harder for me to turn my pages for the winter, my fingers are not working. So these, don't be scared by my 10 pages. It's large type and mostly the scriptures are in here. But anyway, the articles are long and complex, so I'm just going to give you some selected portions You can go, of course, see for yourself whatever you'd like to see if you'd like to study this matter. Let me read from a site called whychristmas.com. I'm breaking into the third or fourth topic on that site that says this. There is another legend, speaking of the Christmas story. There is another legend from Germany about how the Christmas tree came into being. It goes like this. Once on a cold Christmas Eve night, a forester and his family were in their cottage gathered round the fire to keep warm. Suddenly there was a knock on the door. When the forester opened the door, he found a poor little boy standing on the doorstep, lost and alone. Anybody heard this story? I don't think I had ever heard this story. The forester welcomed him into his house, and the family fed and washed him and put him to bed in the youngest son's own bed. The youngest son had to share with his brother that night. The next morning, Christmas morning, the family were woke up by a choir of angels, and the poor little boy had turned into Jesus, the Christ child. The Christ child went into the front garden of the cottage, broke a branch off a fir tree, and gave it to the family as a present to say thank you for looking after them, after him. So ever since then, people have remembered that night by bringing a Christmas tree into their homes. I've never heard that story. But it is not outside the realm of the kinds of stories I have heard, and certainly not outside the realm of the fables and the nursery rhymes and the various stories that people have told down through the centuries that they simply make up out of thin air. So the little boy they washed and put to bed woke up as the Christ child. He just changed overnight. Remarkable. And of course, he broke a branch off the fir tree. I don't know how current ecologists, tree huggers would feel about that. Probably not very good. All right, let's read from focusonthefamily.com. Most of us are familiar with Focus on the Family, a pretty familiar organization that has done a lot of good family counseling and work, but is, of course, primarily a worldwide missionary organization. Question, do you think we should get a Christmas tree? Christmas has always been a warm and wonderful time of year for our family. We love all the traditions. Our kids get very excited when, on the first Sunday of Advent, we pull out the decorations and put up the tree. How many of you know when the first Sunday of Advent is? Good. Good, I don't either. This year, however, I'm having doubts. A very serious Christian friend told me that the Christmas tree originated as a symbol of pagan idolatry. That really threw me for a loop. I certainly don't want to raise my children to celebrate pagan traditions. Now, this is all the question. To focus on the family. Here's the answer. You'll love the first line. This is a question we can't answer for you. Now, it's true that there are some questions that we can't answer, but the Bible doesn't specifically tell us. But this one should be a little easier to answer than that. Families have to develop their own traditions in accord with their own beliefs and customs. Ah, there you go. It's up to you whether it's pagan or not, or whether it's acceptable or not. Christian parents need to decide for themselves what they want to teach their kids and how they want to observe the Savior's birthday. Not whether they want to observe the Savior's birthday, notice, but how they observe the Savior's birthday. We can, however, provide you with some interesting information about the history of the Christmas tree. Perhaps it will help you come to some conclusions regarding this aspect of your holiday celebration. Again, they don't question that you're going to have it, when you're going to have it, all that is automatic here. At a certain level, the Christmas tree does appear to have historical connections with ancient Germanic tree worship and idolatry. But there is at least one story, a story with fairly reliable credentials, which represents it as a Christian repudiation of these pagan practices. Ah, so keeping Christmas is a way to repudiate pagan idolatrous practices. According to this account, the first Christmas tree was the brainchild of a man named Winfrith. Not Winfrith, but Winfrith, also known as by the Latin name Boniface. You've probably heard that one more often. Winfrith was an 8th century English missionary to the heathen Saxons of Germany. When Winfrith came to Geismar in Hesse, or so the tale goes, he found there a huge and very old oak tree that was revered by the natives as sacred to the god Thor. I don't doubt that part so far. In the presence of a large number of hostile Saxons, Winfrith defied the power and or authority of the old gods. He attacked the oak with his axe, but before he could cut it down, a mighty blast of wind came and finished the job for them, or for him. The giant tree was shattered into four great pieces. This convinced the Germans that Winfrith's gospel was true. As a result, they built a chapel out of the wood from the fallen oak. And Winfrith himself, or so it is said, cut a small fir sapling from the forest and placed it in the chapel as a symbol of the Christ child's birth. Just, that seems natural. Let's just go get a little pine tree and put it in here and call it a symbol of Christ's birth. They say this as if that was just sort of a one-off idea. Placed in the chapel as a symbol of the Christ child's birth and the beginning of his reign among this formerly heathen people. So now Christ is beginning to reign among this people because they built a chapel. This, according to a number of sources, is the origin of the Christmas tree as we know it today. Author Henry Van Dyke has written a fictionalized account of this event in his dramatic short story, The First Christmas Tree. Some say the great reformer Martin Luther was responsible for following up on this tradition by introducing the use of Christmas trees in the homes of the German people in the 16th century. Well, that's focus on the family's answer to whether Christmas is pagan. Is that any better than the first one we read? I don't know if they get any better. Oh, sorry, I'm skipping over one. Here's one from a site called Ligonier.org, as in Ligonier, Pennsylvania, spelled the same way. Article, is Christmas a pagan holiday? Answer, that question comes up every year at Christmas time. In the first place, there's no direct biblical commandment to celebrate the birth of Jesus on December 25th. There's nothing in the Bible that would even indicate that Jesus was born on December 25th. So nothing in the Bible indicates that Jesus was born on December 25th. In fact, there's much in the New Testament narratives that would indicate that it didn't occur during that time of year. It just so happens that on the 25th of December in the Roman Empire, there was a pagan holiday that was linked to mystery religions, plural. The pagans celebrated their festival on... I'm going to have trouble even with my type sheets. My fingers get dry and hard. The pagans celebrated their festival on December 25th. The Christians didn't want to participate in that, and so they said, while everybody else is celebrating this pagan thing, we're going to have our own celebration. We're going to celebrate the thing that's most important in our lives, the incarnation of God, the birth of Jesus Christ. So this is going to be a time of joyous festivities, of celebration and worship of our God and King. Sounds kind of innocent at first until you hear what was going on before that time. So this man's conclusion from Ligonier is this. I can't think of anything more pleasing to Christ than the church celebrating his birthday every year. Now, this guy's a minister, by the way. I looked it up. He can't think of anything more pleasing to God. How thoroughly do you suppose he's read and studied his Bible? He can't think of anything more pleasing to God than to celebrate the church celebrating his birthday every year. I'm sorry, pleasing to Christ, not God. Keep in mind that the whole principle of annual festival and celebration is deeply rooted in ancient Jewish traditions. Festival celebration. In other words, holy days, Feast of Tabernacles, etc. Keep in mind that the whole principle... Just keep the principle in mind. Don't worry about the days God commanded. Deeply rooted in ancient Jewish tradition. In the Old Testament, for example, there were times when God emphatically commanded the people to remember certain events with annual celebrations. While the New Testament doesn't require that we celebrate Christmas every year, I certainly see nothing wrong with the churches entering into this joyous time of celebrating the incarnation, which is the dividing point of all human history. Is that a true statement? The incarnation, the birth of Christ, is that the dividing point in all human history? I hope we know that it isn't. It is the death of Christ that is the dividing point in all human history, because it's from that point that sin was able to be forgiven and eternal life offered. Originally, it was intended to honor not Mithras or any of the other mystery religion cults, but the birth of our King. Incidentally, let's tack this on, add a little insult to injury. Incidentally, Easter could be traced to Ishtar in the ancient world. That's his words, not mine. But the Christian church coming together to celebrate the resurrection of Jesus is hardly something I would think would provoke the wrath of God. So even though we know it's a pagan celebration and worship of the goddess Ishtar, surely God wouldn't be upset with us coming together on that date to celebrate the resurrection. Coming to Christianity today, the big guy in the crowd, the elephant in the room, Christianity today. Is Christmas pagan? Article by Bruce Shelley. This is in 1999. It was written and posted. Question. A friend says her church doesn't celebrate Christmas because it began as a pagan holiday. Why then do most churches celebrate Christmas? Answer. Sorry, this is making my throat dry. It's causing all kinds of other problems too. Is Christmas pagan? Answer. Was the event we now all call Christmas originally a pagan holiday? In some ways. Does that mean the church should discard it along with its lights, tinsel, and increasing commercialism? Only if we are prepared. So here's how you make the judgment. Only if we are prepared to abandon many other holidays and common Christian practices that the early church co-opted for its own purpose of glorifying Christ. Understand the word co-opted means it was already pagan. We just decided we'd take it and use it, join forces with them as opposed to confronting it. It's co-opted. We'll share in that. So only if we're willing to abandon all the holidays and practices that were co-opted from the pagans should we also abandon Christmas. If you don't want to do that, come on, it's an all or nothing game here. Okay, well, that's a true statement. He just doesn't know so. If you don't want to abandon them all, why quit keeping Christmas? Christmas has its origin in the 4th century. December 25th, which Christians now herald as Jesus' birthday, was actually the date on which the Romans celebrated the birth of the sun god. Whoa, that's pretty straight, isn't it? After the Roman Emperor Constantine converted to Christianity at the Milvian Bridge in 312, he sought to combine the worship of the sun god with the worship of Christ. Christian leaders accepted Constantine's conversion in a positive light and saw the Christ Mass celebration as a vital part of the process of converting the pagan world. Now, I don't know how much you've read about ancient religion and about early Christianity, so-called, and the missionary zeal of the Roman Catholic Church after this time of about 300, and particularly during the period of exploration of the world. Do you know that much of the world was explored and discovered by Western Europeans because they were going out to try to find all the pagan societies and convert them to Christ? And when you read of some of the methods they did that, it was brutal. They actually rounded them up and beat them into Christianity in many cases. So notice it says this Christmas or Christ Mass, which is what it really means, the Mass of Christ. The celebration was a vital part of the process of converting the pagan world. They're already keeping the religious worship of the sun god on December 25th. We can keep them doing that, except call it Christmas, put Christ's name on it, and we'll all get along just fine, and they'll be converted. Now, conversion, of course, meant supposedly accepting that Christ was the Savior of the world, being baptized by their method, and that was a done deal. Long before Constantine, Christians found ways to redeem local cultures and salvage elements. Whoa! You can buzz right over that. They found ways to redeem local cultures. Redeem them. Buy them back for Christianity. Redeem local cultures and salvage elements in those cultures that naturally pointed to Christ, whether Hebrew, Syrian, Greek, or Roman. I'll put in the word "oh," but it's not in the context here. Oh, they denounced inhumane pagan practices, but at the same time took over pagan temples and converted them to churches. They replaced the old gods in popular devotion with heroic martyrs of the persecutions. And they replaced the holy days of paganism with festivals of the Christian year. Now, that's Christianity Today. The article is much longer. Actually, had to subscribe to Christianity Today to get the rest of it, and I didn't think you were that interested, and I was pretty sure I wasn't. So I didn't bother to pursue that, because like I said, there are hundreds of thousands of sites. But notice, that's Christianity Today, as I said, the big guy in the room, and they're pretty blunt about the fact that, yes, Christianity co-opted paganism in order to convert pagans to Christianity. Let them say the name of Christ, be baptized, and continue exactly as they were, worshiping on the same days, in the same ways, worshiping the same God. From livescience.com, article entitled Pagan Roots? Five surprising facts about Christmas. Early Christians wanted to convert pagans, but they were also fascinated by their traditions. Christians of that period are quite interested in paganism, he said. It's obviously something they think is a bad thing, but it's also something they think is worth remembering. It's what their ancestors did. We have that problem all over the world today, that people still worship whatever their ancestors worshipped in whatever way they worshipped them. So he's saying Christians wanted to maintain the history of their people, and so they had to adopt paganism. Perhaps that's why pagan traditions remained even as Christianity took hold. The Christmas tree is a 17th century German invention, University of Bristol's Hutton told Live Science, but it clearly derives from the pagan practice of bringing greenery indoors to decorate in midwinter. The modern Santa Claus is a direct descendant of England's Father Christmas, who was not originally a gift giver. However, Father Christmas and his other European variations are modern incarnations of old pagan ideas about spirits who traveled through the sky in midwinter. From a professor. This may be the best. SimpleToRemember.com. That's all one word. SimpleToRemember.com. The history of Christmas. How did Christmas come to be celebrated on December 25th? Roman pagans first introduced the holiday of Saturnalia, a week-long period of lawlessness celebrated between December 17th and 25th. During this period, Roman courts were closed, and Roman law dictated that no one could be punished for damaging property or injuring people during the week-long celebration. It was a free-for-all with a pass. You got a pass to have a free-for-all. Brutalize anybody you wanted any way you wanted, I guess. As we go on, we'll find some of that. The festival began when Roman authorities chose, quote, an enemy of the Roman people. Now get this part. This is pretty tragic and pretty sad. The Roman authorities chose, quote, an enemy of the Roman people, end quote, to represent the, quote, Lord of Misrule, end quote. So they took some hapless character, maybe a Jew, maybe a somebody who was contrary to the government, and they said, this guy's an enemy of the empire, and he had to represent the bad guy. We would look at it maybe as Satan. This is a kind of a false, again, representation of certain truth. Each Roman community selected a victim whom they forced to indulge in food and other physical pleasures throughout the week. So he was force-fed in that sense. At the festival's conclusion, December 25th, Roman authorities believed they were destroying the forces of darkness by brutally murdering this innocent man or woman. I'm sorry to be so tragic, but that's exactly what they're saying here, and that's no doubt what happened, that they set up somebody to be an enemy of the country. They fed him and partied with him for a week and then killed him. The ancient Greek writer, poet, and historian Lucian, in his dialogue entitled Saturnalia, describes the festival's observance in his time. In addition to human sacrifice, let's just pass over that, but in addition to human sacrifice, he mentions these customs: widespread intoxication, going from house to house while singing naked, rape and other sexual license, and consuming human-shaped biscuits, still produced in some English and most German bakeries during the Christmas season. Gingerbread men, maybe? In the 4th century, the Christian era, Christianity imported the Saturnalia festival, hoping to take the pagan masses with it. Christian leaders succeeded in converting to... Oh, I must have borrowed a page and put it in the wrong place. Better be here. Well, spokesman club members, I don't believe this. I simply pulled the sermon off the printer without looking at it, and the last 40% of it is missing. Aren't you glad? Okay, the last 40% of it is missing. But all these websites basically wanted to describe incredible events, and they were all pagan, ungodly activities, but they were simply adopted into Christianity and used to celebrate Christ's birth and therefore to bring the pagans in because they didn't have to change anything. They didn't have to change anything. And when they look at these practices, you can see that they are admitting they were awful, but that they are acceptable because, after all, we're celebrating Christ's birth. Now, I've quoted to you over the last two or three months, three times, Christ's statement that in vain do they worship me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men. Mark 7:7, I think. I'm not 100% sure of that. But teaching for doctrines the commandments of men. Or, you know, various kinds of scriptures like Romans 6:16. It says, to whomever you yield yourself servants to obey, his servants you are, to whom you obey. So if you're worshiping an idol, then in a sense is... God made it clear even in the Old Testament, you're in a sense subject to that idol. It has control over you. Let's go to Jeremiah chapter 10. Now, last club meeting, I asked a question of the club members and gave them what I think for some of them was probably a surprising answer. But I want to go to Jeremiah chapter 10. I think we're all probably pretty familiar with Jeremiah chapter 10. But in the context of what we've just been reading and the time in which we live, let's read it again. Jeremiah chapter 10, verse 1. Hear the word which the Eternal speaks to you, O house of Israel. Thus says the Eternal. Do not learn the way of the Gentiles. O King James says heathen. The Hebrew actually probably says nations. Do not learn the way of the Gentiles. Do not be dismayed at the signs of heaven. Worshipping the sun god or worshipping the various constellations, the signs of the zodiac, etc. For the Gentiles are dismayed at them, for the customs of the peoples are futile or vain, again, as the old King James says. For one cuts a tree from the forest, the work of the hands of the workman with the axe. Well, that's a real corruption, isn't it? I mean, the little boy just went out in the yard and broke a branch off a tree. Why don't they do that? The work of the hands of the workman with the axe. They decorate it with silver and gold. They fasten it with nails and hammers so that it will not topple. They are upright like a palm tree, and they cannot speak. They must be carried because they cannot go by themselves. Do not be afraid of them, for they cannot do evil, nor can they do any good. Now, I asked the club, I said, how many of you think this is describing a Christmas tree? And I think I can say the majority of the group said they did. Or I didn't say it's describing a Christmas tree. If I worded it right, and I think I did, maybe I didn't. I said, how many of you think this is a Christmas tree? And most of them said yes. Because, of course, in the general sense, that's what the church has always taught. And I'm certainly not to change that teaching. But I said, well, maybe, maybe not. And the reason I said that was that this is clearly an idol. It's clearly an idol carved out of wood or made out of a tree. And it could have been either one. There is evidence in the Hebrew language here that the thing is carved with an axe, that it stands up like a pole, that it has a rounded top, etc. And so it could be more like what we call a totem pole today, or some kind of an idol that is built for the purpose of worship. It's upright like a palm tree, it says. A palm tree is mostly trunk, if you have lived in any of those areas where they have those big tall palms, like we had in our yard in Pasadena, California. They're about 70 feet high, but the first 60 feet is is nothing but trunk. They're upright as a palm tree. So these may not have been the same fir trees that we're talking about today. In fact, I don't know if they even grew in that way in Palestine at the time. So that's irrelevant. The point is the principle of the thing here, isn't it? Because in this case, it's the principle that God is talking about, not the object, but the idolatry that goes with it. Because that idol could be almost anything. So I'm not saying it was not a fir tree. It may well have been a fir tree in the mystery religions way back from Babylon that was carried forward to Israel and carried forward, of course, to our day today. So it could be the same tree. I don't deny that at all. I just want us to understand that whatever it is, it was a tree. It was carved or built from a tree. It was fastened down so that it didn't topple over. And all of that reminds me, I stopped keeping Christmas because my parents did in 1955, I think. But I remember very well the older brothers bringing in a fir tree and building a X in the bottom out of a couple of two-by-fours or logs or whatever to keep the tree from falling over. So, sure, it could be a fir tree in the same way that the fir trees we just talked about were described in some of these articles that we read. But it doesn't have to be a fir tree. It can be an idol of any sort, carved like a human being, carved like a part of a human being, which they often were, carved like an animal. Any part of that would still be true. Notice God's contradiction, verse 6. Inasmuch as there is none like you, O Eternal, you are great, and your name is great in might. Who would not fear you, O King of the nations? See, he has said, don't fear them, they can't do anything. Now the response is, who would not fear you? For this is your rightful due, for among all the wise men of the nations and all their kingdoms, there is none like you. But they are altogether dull-hearted and foolish. A wooden idol, see that statement, a wooden idol is worthless doctrine. Silver is beaten into plates. Another reason I think it might have been more of a totem pole. They took the silver and beat it thin and wrapped the pole in it or created images on it or whatever. Silver is beaten into plates. It is brought from Tarshish and gold from Euphaz, the work of the craftsmen and of the hands of the metalsmith. Blue and purple are their clothing. So apparently there again, they decorated them colorfully. Blue and purple are their clothing. They are all the work of skillful men. So it's not a question of the quality of the building of the idol or the symmetry of the perfect fir tree that you found on the Christmas tree farm. That's not the issue. Here's the issue, verse 10. But the Eternal is the true God. He is the living God and everlasting King. At his wrath the earth will tremble, and the nations will not be able to endure his indignation. Nations will not be able to endure his indignation. Let's go back to Exodus chapter 20. Exodus chapter 20. Now, I want to point out that I have not done what Mr. Servideo confessed to. I did not come into the pulpit thinking God would just give me something to talk about. I worked hard at preparing something. I just didn't work hard at checking it when it came off the printer. So I have 6 pages. Probably ran out of paper, which is common because I print a lot. I have 6 pages instead of 10. Exodus chapter 20. And God spoke all these words, saying, I am the Eternal, your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. You shall have no other gods before me. So the idolatry, the placing something else in front of God, is the issue here. And it's not about whether the thing was initially pagan or not pagan. It was pagan because it was made a god. It was made to worship. It was made to bow down to. Now, most of our people in our society today would not say they ever, quote, bow down to the Christmas tree. Now, on the other hand, they do sing songs to the Christmas tree. There are certain songs that are like that. O Christmas Tree being the one I remember from my youth. There are ways that they honor the Christmas tree and look at it as if it's God, to put an angel on top or put a god on top of some sort, whatever the case may be. But they don't think they worship the tree. They are worshiping Christ through the tree, but that's the same kind of thing that happens in any religion that uses icons to represent the gods, whether it's carved idols, whether it's trees, whatever it might be. By the way, my first experience with this in a practical sense, I was working as a 20-year-old. I had probably just been married. I don't remember if I was married yet or not, but I was working as a 20-year-old on a job site where we were testing the soil to build a giant steel mill off of Lake Michigan in northern Indiana. We were doing soil testing with a big rig. And nearby, we had to go through a street that passed a large house that was being framed, a huge house. And my boss, who was sort of a mover and shaker in the community, explained that that was a home owned by one of the Scandinavian owners of some local business. And one day we came through there, and the house was still just being framed. It was basically big lumber. And up at the top was nailed a fir tree, right at the very top of the thing. Have you ever seen that? That some of you have, okay. Probably not common down here, because probably don't have a lot of Scandinavians, but anyway, I think that's basically where it came from. And again, that brings to mind the god Thor, but anyway, I said, what's that pine tree doing up there on top? And he said, it's sort of a dedication to God, or their god, to put that pine tree up there. As soon as they get to the highest level of the house, they nail that pine tree up there, and it stays there until they complete the house. Or at least get to the point where they have to remove it to finish the roof or whatever. And that stays there, and that's their symbol that God is watching over the house. It's sort of the, you know, the feng shui idea of the Asians and so forth. It's a means of worshiping God. Going on, sorry, I interrupted the scripture here. You shall have no other gods before me. Verse 4, you shall not make for yourself a carved image, any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them nor serve them. Bow down to them nor serve them, either one or both. In most cases it would be both. For I, the eternal your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity, that is the lawlessness, the sins of the fathers upon the children to the third and fourth generations of those who hate me, but showing mercy to thousands to those who love me and keep my commandments. So God says you don't make any kind of an image, and you don't worship anything except the true creator God. So that should have been pretty clear to Israel, and obviously was. It isn't very clear, seemingly, to Christians today, who often use such carved images even in their worship. Let's go to Deuteronomy here, chapter 30. Deuteronomy chapter 30. Before I read this, I'm going to go back to the last item I was reading and give it back to you, because this one contains some pretty dramatic and remarkable descriptions of how the Saturnalia was kept, and of course makes no bones about the fact that it is the precursor of the Christmas celebration. So let me give you that one again if you didn't write it down, and if you want to look it up, it's simple to remember, one word, simpletoremember.com. The article is The History of Christmas. The subhead article is How Did Christmas Come to Be Celebrated on December 25th? I mentioned that because I had a three or four more paragraphs that I wanted to read to you that I thought were particularly interesting in a condemning of the practice of keeping Christmas. All right, where are we? Deuteronomy 30. Verse 15. Verse 15. See, I have set before you today life and good, death and evil. A good life or a bad life leading to death. in that I command you today to love the Eternal your God, to walk in his ways and to keep his commandments, his statutes and his judgments, that you may live and multiply, and the Eternal your God will bless you in the land which you go to possess. Now remember, this is the book of Deuteronomy. This is right before they're crossing over the Jordan to go into the promised land. Shortly before Moses died. He was rehearsing all these things with them. Verse 17, but if your heart turns away so that you do not hear and are drawn away and worship other gods and serve them, I announce to you today that you shall surely perish. You shall not prolong your days in the land which you cross over the Jordan to go in and possess. And this is when he made the major statement that we all recognize and remember. I call heaven and earth as witnesses today against you, that I've set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore choose life, that both you and your descendants may live, that you may love the Eternal your God, that you may obey his voice, that you may cling to him, for he is your life and the length of your days, and that you may dwell in the land which the Eternal swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give them. Stay away from idol worship, he says, and worship me. I am your God and King. You go back and look at some of the pagan practices and see how they were co-opted into Christianity and how they were sort of massaged and adjusted to meet the needs of society over time, and of course ultimately brought into Israel remarkably by none other than the Queen herself, Queen Victoria of England, who was married to a German, Prince Albert, decided to sort of honor him and give him some respect and comfort by creating a Christmas celebration in the palace, which was completely new to Britain at that time, and of course migrated to America, though the Puritans and others rejected the concept completely as a pagan idea. But Queen Victoria brought it into modern-day Israel, in a sense, by setting up a Christmas tree and putting gifts under it and so forth in the palace back 200 years ago. So interesting developments as we look at what happens in life. I remember having absolutely no experience with Christmas, but being a rebellious 17-year-old or so, my friends coming around a couple of days before and say, hey, we're all going to go Christmas caroling around town. Would you come and be part of it? I was part of the chorale and the little octet we had and so forth. And so they wanted to know if I'd come and sing Christmas carols with them. And I had no idea what Christmas carols were. We didn't even have really good TV in those days. I didn't really understand what Christmas carols were. But they explained to me, oh, we're just going to go and walk around the people's houses and stand outside their houses and sing Christmas songs to cheer them up. So we did that. And I remember a couple of places where we were quite familiar with the families, and they had big picture windows in the back of the house where we go around the house in the backyard and just start singing. And pretty soon they're all gathered at the windows looking outside and all applauding and invite us in for hot chocolate or whatever. It was a big deal. And I'm sure glad we didn't know we were supposed to do that naked. I mean, that apparently is how it started. I mean, even some of these articles admit that the Christmas caroling tradition goes back to that Saturnalia tradition of going around drinking and singing naked through the neighborhoods on that particular night. At any rate, our experiences within the church, and most of you who are even second or third, fourth generation members of the church probably have no such experiences in your lives, and I hope that you don't. But it was something that everybody just took to be innocent and fun and uplifting and happy, and that's the way mankind reasons. It doesn't matter whether God says, don't do it. It's fun. It's good. How could that be harmful? How could it hurt anything? And you could say that about almost every reasoning that man does to decide he's going to break God's commandments. Just ignore them altogether. Well, God doesn't feel that way. He says, in vain do they worship me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men. And this people's lips honor me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. We don't want to be in that category. Christmas definitely comes from pagan roots. We definitely want no part of it. The church does not keep or acknowledge or honor Christmas in any way, and you should not feel guilty in any way or feel out of place or foolish or different just because you tell your teacher or your boss or your neighbor or whomever know I don't keep Christmas. You don't have to go into preaching the gospel to them unless they invite it, but you do need to be fully committed and convinced in your own mind that it is absolutely contrary to God's will and God's purpose, is a false religious experience that is a product of paganism from the beginning. And if all goes well next week, I would hope to go into that broader picture. We'll pull the camera back a little away from Christmas and look at false religion as a package and how it came to be and how it devolved down into the things that we see around us today, which are so acceptable to people that they don't even have a clue that there's anything wrong with what they do. But I hope for today this has helped you to understand not that we don't keep Christmas because of the practices or the commercialism. We don't keep Christmas because it worships unintentionally and unknowingly and ignorantly on the part of most who would think we're crazy to say that they're worshiping another God. But it basically puts another God before the true God and is contrary to God's will and purpose for those whom he has called to set an example of his way of life. So I don't think I'm going to have to worry about any of you keeping Christmas anyway, but I thought I'd refresh it in our minds for this year. Haven't done it for 2 or 3, 4 years. But I do it today. And talking to Mr. Servideo, I found out he was giving a split sermon along the same lines today as well. So that probably means God's guiding and directing what we're trying to give you as a diet at this time of the year.